Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Welcome, I'm Ann Hillman. Many conversations about suicide only focus on prevention and looking for the warning signs. But what happens if a suicide has already happened? How do we talk about it publicly and privately in healthy, supportive ways? My guests today are Scott Jensen and Alex DeMarvan from the Alaska Dispatch News. They both covered the death at AFN this month, and Alex has written about suicides throughout Alaska. Thank you for being here. Also with us is Eric Boyer, a training coordinator with UAA who teaches about suicide. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So let's start the conversation with ADN's coverage of the death at AFN. You both were in the convention center when that happened.
Yeah.
Scott, how did you, once you realized what was going on, how did you decide what to take photos of, where to be?
Well, to back up just a little bit, I had heard the sound and I had dismissed it as a piece of equipment falling over because I was inside my head trying to, you know, file pictures. And then probably about 5 minutes later, I got a text from somebody at the office asking, did someone get shot at AFN? So immediately, I was thinking that this was a crime. It was a murder, possibly a shooting in the lobby. Mm-hmm. And so I headed out, grabbed my camera, and headed out of the common area there into the lobby as Anna was giving the statement that there's been a tragedy. So immediately I knew there's something going on. I get outside the main area on the third floor, and everyone's streaming out on the second floor. They're ushering people out the emergency exits. And so I'm thinking, gosh, there's somebody on the loose. You know, it was somewhat panicky. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, I'm just trying to collect images. And this is pretty common practice for photographers and video journalists in the field, is that, you know, we take pictures first and then gather as much information as we can and gather as many images as we can. And then we decide later, that can be, you know, 5 minutes later, it can be an hour later, it can be a days later, what to publish. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, that's the mode that I was in. And so I was trying to take pictures of everything and document the scene.
Okay.
And because again, at that moment, I was under the impression that this was a shooting and mm-hmm. this was a possible homicide.
Okay. And Alex, what were you doing at that point?
Initially, I was in another room and I did not hear the sound. There was a separate room where all the award winners at AFN had just gone. It's a great moment at AFN where a lot of the kind of local heroes and villages who are doing wonderful things are honored, and they had gone to a separate room on the convention outside of the main convention floor. And I was in that room, and they were just about to start talking further about what great things these people had done. I was there interviewing people about some of the awesome work they'd done in the villages. And then a person helping to run that meeting then came, made a statement, something tragic has happened. I forget his exact words at that mm-hmm. time. But you know, I think he said, you know, someone appears to have died. There's may have something bad has happened, basically. Mm-hmm. And we'd like people to stay in the room. And then immediately after that, I got a text, probably was from the same person, you know, mm-hmm. in my newsroom saying what happened. So then I left the room, and of course I didn't know either what had happened, but I began walking around and saw that there was, looked like a crime scene, mm-hmm. you know, initially.
And apparently there had been a tweet that had been sent out saying, indicating that there was a shooting.
Mm-hmm. And I'd seen those tweets.
And I never saw those, but that's what our folks back at the office had seen.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what it sounded like.
And it did. It sounded like a gunshot.
So once you guys realized it wasn't a crime scene and that mm-hmm. it had been a suicide, how did you shift your coverage and how did you shift your approach?
I did not realize that it was a suicide until I was back upstairs filing the pictures that I had recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And security and AFN staff were, you know, trying to stop me from taking pictures of the scene, you know, which is another issue that, you know, we may or may not discuss. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I didn't know that it was a suicide until, you know, minutes after. I mean, well after I was done with my initial coverage of the topic. And so at that point, there was a discussion being had back in the newsroom about what to publish and what not to publish. And I actually wasn't part of that discussion because I was still on the scene. I don't know if Alex was part of that discussion.
Well, yeah, let's see. As soon as I learned that it was a suicide, I wasn't part of any discussion in the newsroom because I was down at AFN, although we were having discussion electronically. Mm-hmm. About some things through the night. But when I learned it was a suicide, one of the first things I did was go up to the convention floor. Mm-hmm. And see what the reaction was there, because obviously that was an important thing coming at the tail end of this convention, where suicide was such an important issue. And then, I mean, if you think back to the convention even the year before and previous conventions, it's always a big issue. Don Young the year before had made some untoward statements that mm-hmm. he later apologized for related to suicide. That was the kind of the big news at the previous convention. Anyway, so I went up to the convention floor and immediately saw that there was reaction from leaders at AFN. There was praying and singing. There's a group called Returning to Harmony that had immediately said they would talk to people, anybody in the building who needed kind of to talk to someone about the issue, because of course it was devastating. So I immediately began to collect those sort of more positive responses to something that was clearly tragic. And so, as we often do in the media with these kinds of stories, it was my goal to make sure I included a lot of that sort of show of unity mm-hmm. and the great response.
And Eric, do you feel like that was a good way to handle it once it became apparent that someone had died by suicide?
In terms of reporting on the positive things that were happening, yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think, you know, that situation, when we look at suicides that occur in Alaska or anywhere, that's a really extreme situation that obviously our folks at the Dispatch News don't normally encounter, obviously, because it wasn't even understood to be a suicide mm-hmm. for such a long period of time. You know, so I think any reporting that you do that has positive elements, that is going to give a message of hope and support for those directly impacted, mm-hmm. Whether it's the media or the people there attending AFN or in the community out in the street, and then all of the people going forward looking at the, because I saw some of those same images of the positive things, mm-hmm. and that's helpful. It gives hope and support that people are connecting and rallying around each other.
I saw some of the feedback from various people who felt like maybe, and these are from readers of ADN and on the website, they felt like maybe you shouldn't be taking photos of people praying or shouldn't be taking photos, period. What kind of feedback did you guys get, and what were your reactions?
Well, I saw the same feedback, of course, that mm-hmm. you did, like on our comments, and that, you know, some people were supportive of what we were doing, other people were concerned that maybe there was too much information. Essentially, mm-hmm. To me, it was an important story in the sense that, and it was also important to include some details that maybe we normally wouldn't include, because we typically don't even cover suicides in terms of the individual mm-hmm. events. Mm-hmm. But I thought maybe by including more this time than mm-hmm. normal, just slight more, there were still constraints, of course. Maybe it would bring home to people mm-hmm. how big a deal this is. Not just, you know, to Alaskans, we all know how big a deal it is, but even policymakers, maybe in D.C. or internationally, mm-hmm. or, you know, maybe, you know, at the governor's mansion, maybe by bringing mm-hmm. home how devastating this is, maybe there can be change that comes out of that. So anyway,
Scott,
I think it's important to, from my perspective as a photographer, as a video journalist who is covering whatever the scene is to give an accurate portrayal of what's happened. And it was a shocking event. I mean, it was sensational. I mean, it was very dramatic. And, you know, the folks that were in the building at the time witnessed it and had to witness it. They couldn't help but witness it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, I mean, and it's kind of strange to say, but almost out of respect for the people who were there that didn't have a choice in this scene, that we need to put these images out and put the information out, especially considering that there was so much confusion, you know, with the, you know, what happened. And if there's a gunman on the loose, you know, mm-hmm. it's important for the public to understand that that isn't the case.
It's true.
And so I think that was a bit of the rationale with publishing the images and the information that we did at that moment.
Mm-hmm. And Eric, do you agree that this, it was a very sensational event, but we don't want to sensationalize suicide.
Right.
So how do we walk that line? How do we cover this?
Well, I think one of the points that you two gentlemen hit on is important is getting the information out there to the public. And that is important part of suicide postvention being what we do after a suicide has occurred. So to support the people in the community is reporting on the facts accurately, but doing it so that it doesn't sensationalize the act itself mm-hmm. or the event of suicide. But it's letting people know that suicide has occurred, and as you guys mentioned, it is tragic, and then going into here's how we can help each other to be able to promote healing and to prevent future suicides. You need to let people know what are the resources out there. If somebody's in a similar place where they think that taking their own life by their own hand is their only recourse, that here are some resources here in Anchorage or around the state of Alaska that they can access right here and now to be able to get the help they need. Because we know that folks who are suffering from thoughts of wanting to take their own life, that generally speaking, there's issues of a mental illness in place or substance use issues or a combination, and that we know treatment works, and we let people know there's options out there when this place, and making connections. And that's what's nice about the positive side of stories around that is that people know they can make connections around this.
If someone is in that circumstance in their life, that
yes.
they're in at risk of suicide, seeing the like the song of comfort that the group at AFN sang afterwards and seeing the images of people praying, does that help them in that situation?
Well, I think every individual is different, but I think positive things that show people rallying around and supporting can be. It's just like, I think it was KTUU put out reproduced a video postcard that some of the students in Chivac sent to the people in Hooper Bay last week. And it was just a really heartfelt message where kids are saying, hey, we care about you and you matter and we're thinking about you guys. And they just did this really short to let people know. And it's a positive message coming across in a tremendously tragic time mm-hmm. that doesn't end in a few days. You know, we have to keep looking at how to support folks long term.
I wanna jump back to something that you said earlier, Alex. You said that, and you're right, we don't normally cover suicides unless it's something like Hooper Bay where it's for young adults.
Usually. Why? After a cluster.
After a cluster, after something very public, why don't we?
I mean, just generally, I think we don't want to sensationalize it. We're fearful of copycat suicide. Mm-hmm. We're fearful of glamorizing someone and of spreading sort of the unhappiness that occurs with it. So mm-hmm. those are all reasons why we typically don't do it. Those are some of the reasons.
Eric, do you think we should?
Actually, I do. And not to just counteract what you're saying, I think what you're saying is right on. Mm-hmm. If things are reported in an inappropriate way or sensationalizing, we had first evidence of this when Marilyn Monroe died. Mm-hmm. The newspapers around the country really glamorized her death and the person that she was. Mm-hmm. And in the 3 months post her death, we saw a 12% increase in suicides across America. Mm-hmm. Nothing like that we've ever seen before around a person like that. So we know that if you report things, reporting the facts and that there's help out there. So like an example is when Kurt Cobain died mm-hmm. in the mid-90s by his own hand. His mom and his wife both publicly denounced the act of suicide as being the answer to life's problems, mm-hmm. but that he could gotten help, and these are sources, these are actual ways that somebody can get help. And there was no noticeable increase in suicides in Western United States or across the U.S. after his death. Because we can look back at that data. Mm-hmm. Now, another good example is Robin Williams' death. Well, it's almost been 2 years now.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And there was, we don't have the numbers yet mm-hmm. because it takes about 2 years for the CDC in Atlanta to report on that. Mm. But what we do know is that media across the country reported on his suicide, well-known figure, but they didn't sensationalize the way he died or his death, but who he was. Mm-hmm. And that when you're suffering from depression or other illnesses, here are resources. And the resources went across all the lines around the country, and there was a huge spike in the number of people calling crisis lines, calling mental health centers, community centers, and you know, organizations like the National Alliance for Mental Illness and things like that. Because mm-hmm. people saw they were hurting and they wanted help, and so they took that information that went out on the news and in print.
Mm-hmm. Which brings us to, we might as well put out the care line right now. There is a resource available in Alaska. If you call 1-877-266-4357 is the care line for anyone who is feeling like you're hurting or like you're depressed.
Yes.
And we also have a short video of an artist who's trying to combat these feelings of loneliness and isolation, and through that get people to talk about it and reduce the number of people who are considering suicide. Let's watch a video from Casey Ellingson.
Sarah Davies set out to create her vision of a large-scale installation that would bring awareness to the isolation and despair felt by people living with a mental illness. The concept was inspired by Davies' personal struggle with emotional distress. Nearly 2 years and hundreds of volunteers later, the 100 Stone Project is almost complete.
We have face models and figure models, and then they become unified. We merge them into one figure. And so with 85 figures, that's close to 200 of us that are telling our stories in this very unique way.
The end product will feature dozens of sculpted statues, 85 to be exact, wading out into the tides of Point Warrensoff. Each figure was inspired by the individuals Davies met across the state, who volunteered to be casted for this project. Davies and her team of volunteer sculptors have worked tirelessly since May to assemble the statues.
Being able to physically traverse all of these figures with my hands and inviting other people to touch each and every single one of these people under conditions of isolation means everything. It's awakening. That emotional, sensory memory is really what's most important to me.
The 100 Stone installation will be completed and open to the public on December 5th of this year. According to Davies, a major goal behind this project was not the final installation, but the process of connecting with the individuals who took part.
I believe it is our attitudes towards ourselves and one another that perpetuate our sense and validate sometimes our sense of isolation.
She hopes to help shatter the stigma and silence attached to mental illness and to remind people that they are not alone.
Through witnessing this major truth-telling event, we can look around and recognize that these truths, as dark or as light as they may be, are beautiful, and they are our truths. And maybe we're beautiful too.
This is Casey Ellingson in Anchorage.
It's quite the project.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. She's working very hard to fight the stigmas associated with mental illness, to fight the stigmas of feeling alone. What do you feel that we in the media can do to fight that? This is...
We do cover positive stories as well, and
mm-hmm.
pretty regularly, I would say. Probably not regularly enough, though, and I think mm-hmm. doing more of that is
that.
Something that I think we should be doing. Mm-hmm. And looking deeper into the issues and also at the what appear to be limited resources in key areas, too, to help combat some of the suicide. Maybe, you know, efforts to raise awareness of folks who may be in danger. And efforts to have counseling, hopefully locally run, writing about those things as well, finding out where the gaps are. Those are things the media can do as well, I think. So, mm-hmm.
I would agree. I think that's right on. You know, at the university, we support a lot of organizations around the state doing positive work. And even here in Anchorage, I chair our local Anchorage Suicide Prevention Coalition. And we have great stories of what organizations are doing right here in Anchorage to support people locally around the issue of dealing with the suicide or preventing them. And we love to partner with the Dispatch News in getting those stories out. And they're awesome. And I think when you do put those out publicly, you do exactly that, is you reduce some of the stigma and shame felt about mental illness or using substances, and that people know that, that a lot of those things are, they happen in our lives, and that there's help out there and people willing to support you to get through it.
Mm-hmm. When we were speaking yesterday, Eric, you shared some fairly astounding facts and figures about the numbers of people who experience mental illness but don't seek help.
Yes, we know in America, and I think Alaska is a pretty good reflection of those same numbers and statistics, but of people that suffer from a diagnosable, you know, bout or long-term depression, over 60% of the folks that suffer from depression will never get help or support in their lifetime. And the people that do get help, it's, you're looking at on average of like 10 years before they even seek that help. So if you compare that to somebody having heart disease, if you have hypertension, you know, early onset of some heart issues, who would wait 10 years before you go to see somebody to get help for that? So we know if people that can be willing to go out and get the help, the support of the community or professionals around the issue of depression or anxiety or other mental health issues, that the treatments there are pretty good. Mm-hmm. And they can get some support and help there that could help them be in a better place.
Do you feel like we can talk about this too much? Do you feel like in the media we can talk about this too much?
Well, I'm in favor of talking about things as much as possible, so I would say maybe not, but I would ask his opinion. I would be interested in his opinion.
I can tell you that I think we're so far removed from talking about it too much that, boy, if we can get to that day where we've talked about suicide prevention, the warning signs and the myths and what we can do to get help, that I'm all about looking at how we change that message into the next step. But I think as a community here in Alaska, I run into people every day who don't know that, oh, you mean I can talk about suicide and I'm not going to put the idea in somebody's head? And that I can help people if I recognize what's going on and I can just listen and talk to them and support them through the crisis. We got a long ways to go. We're teaching people and trying to share that message, but there's a lot of people, they don't teach this at an academic level. Mm-hmm. And so we're left to learning about it through people, professionals of all walks who learn about it and can share that information. And the media is a great way to do it.
And from my perspective, personally, my preference is a visual storytelling. You know, seeing stories like that one we just watched, it's beautiful. You know, she's creating works of art and she's helping people at the same time. And I'm always interested in those two things, something emotional, something visual, and helping people. I mean, that's why journalists, we got into this business, is ultimately to help the communities that we're serving.
Agreed, and let people tell their stories.
Yeah.
Oftentimes when we discuss suicide, it's in a very rural context, and we talk about suicide in rural Alaska. It's also an issue here in urban Alaska, in Anchorage as well, Eric.
Yes, it is. So if you look at Anchorage, you know, we have, between here and Mat-Su, we have roughly half the population of the state. Mm-hmm. Half the suicides occur right here. The number of suicides that occur in Anchorage to homicides is almost 4-1. So most people in Anchorage, they don't realize that because they see a lot of publicity around the homicides that happened. There was just one just recently out in Eagle River. People hear about that. But they don't hear about a lot of the suicides that happen. It's a very private thing. And I think one of the ways that we can combat the stigma around suicide is if we're more open to talking about it. And if people know, oh wow, there's 60, 70, 80 people in Anchorage are gonna die by suicide this year, then it's something we should talk about so what we can prevent some of those from happening.
Should we portray the message differently when talking with an urban audience versus a rural audience?
Well, I think some of the same components could be a part of that, like, you know, warning signs of suffering from depression or withdrawal or using substances or a breakup could happen to somebody in a village, it could happen to somebody in Anchorage, anywhere. Those kind of things and getting help, making a connection. What those connections look like can definitely be different. As you guys mentioned, you're not gonna have the same resources in a small village a rural area, you know, even on the road system compared to an Anchorage or Fairbanks, you know, Matsu or Juneau. So what those connections look like, maybe it is an elder or an aunt or a neighbor or a coach or a teacher. Who is that person who's willing to listen and help somebody through those crises? Whereas here in Anchorage, you know, it could be those same people, but then maybe they take you to a next level because it's more immediately available and it's right here in our backyard.
Is there something as the media, as the news, what can we do? What's our role, you know, as long as we are following the best practices of reporting on suicide?
You got 30 seconds to tell us.
Okay. So if for Alaska Dispatch News or any media, knowing that it's okay to report on suicide, that they happen, and if we make that information aware in a safe way to our communities, that people know it happens and then they can get the help because the resources are there. And I can give you a complete list of our resources.
All right, and we'll try to make those available online. Thank you for joining us.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.